With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going. You're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the publisher fight back. It's time for the publisher fight back.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new Ingram power.
And welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor-in-chief at Video Week, and my guest this week is Brian Cullinan, who is chief revenue officer for a company called Video Elephant. Video Elephant, if you don't know them, they're a company that syndicates video to all sorts of publishers, which has traditionally been the more online publishers who are putting video on their own sites and accepting syndicated video. But their business is increasingly steering towards OTT, and they've just launched their own app, videoelephant.tv. If you're listening to this after subscribing in your podcast reader, and I recommend you do so if you haven't done so already, you can also see a Q&A with the CEO of Video Elephant, Stephen O'Shaughnessy, and you can... So you can double up and listen to the podcast alongside the Q&A with the company's CEO. A little bit of news from us. We have new Video Frontiers coming up on this year. It's going from the 19th to the 22nd of October. The 2 days of the conference are free to attend. You can register for free. There will be limited capacity, so I recommend that you do reserve your place. It might get trickier as we go further down the line. There will be some components. The first 2 days are by invitation only, so we just need to manage the numbers a little bit, and we can't offer it out to the open market. But the 2 days of the conference are free. We're asking people to buy in a little bit to the event this year, to approach it like they would a normal event, to set aside the time, because we will have networking opportunities. You will be able to meet, whether you want to hang out with your colleagues or meet new people. There will be components where you're able to sort of go around digital tables and make some new friends and contacts and hopefully generate some new business. We're really hoping that we can provide a digital event that provides as much human interaction. I think that's something that most of us are missing at this moment in time. We're really trying to make that happen in a digital environment, and we're hoping that attendees will buy into that and hopefully get that nice, warm, human feeling that we all get from in-person events. So now I'll cross over to my chat with Brian. We discuss everything from how publishers are faring with their video strategies. We discuss how the content licensing market works and, of course, their new OTT app. So how's everything in Dublin? I mean, I know, you know, it's obviously my hometown. I'm curious to know how the lockdown has been affecting the city and then how it's been affecting you and Video Elephant.
I would say Dublin, very, very quiet. There was a bit of an uptick in activity, you know, maybe in July, August, but that's been clamped down again since. So say quite lonely, and it's incredible to see, you know, places where you went to get your sandwiches in the past, where you might have had to stand in a queue, are just gone. You can literally walk in and walk out. I recently went into to buy a jacket in Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, you know, well, right in the city centre, top of Grafton Street, and it was, you know, it was an afternoon on a Thursday, and the guy said to me I was his first sale that day, which is a bit depressing. So yeah, it's quiet. But I'm hearing the same for London. I'm hearing the same for New York. I'm hearing the same for everywhere else. So it's just what we're seeing globally. I think people did try to trickle back into their offices. I was certainly trying to get back in 1 or 2 days a week just for a little bit of normalcy and just to, you know, change the scenery and kind of have more of a kind of a normal work environment, but that's been stopped now because it was a new restrictions introduced just a few weeks ago. So we just have to see how it all pans out. Video Elephant, on the other hand, we're actually doing we're doing very well, I would say. You know, like all businesses at the start of the lockdown, you know, we were impacted. Everyone had to adjust really, really quickly to working remotely. So we've people everywhere from Berlin to Los Angeles and Dublin and New York and other places and Madrid, and everyone just kind of got on with it. I would say people adapted really, really quickly. And, you know, there's been lots of benefits and positive aspects to it. Like, for, personally speaking, for someone who, you know, who lived in airplanes, you know, doing whatever, 120,000 air miles a year, and haven't been in an airplane since last March, that's been a very positive thing. Good for my waistline, good for my heart. Yeah, like from the company perspective, like everyone, we saw, you know, a dip in revenues kind of in March, April, May, but they've bounced back very, very strongly. And some of our customers are starting to do really, really well. And I think the team, you know, everywhere where they're working have adapted superbly. And we've got a lot of stuff done that maybe on more normal times we might never have got to doing, or we mightn't have looked at, or just, overall, I would say it's been a pretty positive experience. I think some of the people are also really enjoying, you know Dublin well, Vinny. The commute can be, you know, pretty onerous, and people are enjoying working from home and the freedom that gives them, and the extra time it's given them back. Pros and cons, but I would say lots of positives. I think, you know, as a company, we did an awful lot of remote selling anyway. Like, we would have, you know, we are acquiring content all the time remotely. We're licensing content out all the time remotely to all corners of the world. I suppose where we've seen the lockdown impact us most severely is on the business development side. As you can imagine, no in-person meetings, no conferences, no events. It's hard to initiate new conversations, new contacts. No nights out in the Corconian in Cologne or in these kind of places to start conversations with people that you can follow up subsequently. So all those kind of things. But overall, I'd say definitely more in the plus column than in the negative column.
So we should probably just map out for people who aren't familiar with Video Elephant. Like, you know, you guys have been on a quite a long and interesting journey. You know, could you just explain the Video Elephant business model right up until what you're announcing this week?
Sure, love to. So I suppose in simple terms, we're a double-sided business. So on one side, we work with the owners, creators, publishers of video content. And our value proposition to them is, you have this video content, it's valuable, it's made, it's paid for, give it to us, put it on our platform, and we will help you distribute that around the world and generate incremental license fee income for it. So that's everyone from major brands like Bloomberg, Fox, Reuters, Al Jazeera, Bonnier, many, many, many brands and publishers, down to smaller, kind of very specialized niche content owners and creators. So we take all this content in. Today, we've the guts of about 1,000 feeds of content, delivering somewhere in the region of 2,000 to 3,000 new videos a day into the platform. We've about north of 2 million assets in the library, spanning all categories, verticals, languages, etc. And so the flip side of that is we then make this very large, diverse library of content available to anyone who needs to license content. So traditionally, that's been traditional digital publishers, online publishers, but increasingly we're seeing lots more use cases, obviously OTT, digital out of home, but what we refer to a lot is, you know, if there's a screen and there's eyeballs, then it's a potential customer for us. So, and we've been referred to kind of like the Getty Images for video. So you come in, we have this vast library of content. It's a very simple commercial model, and they just take the content from us. Where we're quite different in the market to kind of where we often people might get a little bit confused is, We've never got involved in the player, the technology part of it. And on the other side, we've never got involved on the monetization or the demand side of it. So we've been literally a content source. We've been around since 2012, grew out of Dublin, like all Irish and I suppose European startups. Everyone chases the big honeypot that is the US. So we expanded into the US in a meaningful way in late 2014, 15, put some boots on the ground there in 2015 and have built out a team there in New York and LA ever since. So today, probably 75% of our revenues come out of the US market and the rest of the world. We've customers in New Zealand, we've customers in Asia, we've customers in the UK and all around Europe. But the US is a big market for us.
One thing you mentioned to me before was about the, you know, it wasn't just publishers licensing content or, you know, that you had this sort of unconventional category of customers. Could you tell me a bit about those types of companies that you deal with?
Yeah, I mean, our core business still remains online media, digital publishers. So publishers who, you know, they have the traffic, they have the page views, they have the, let's say, the video infrastructure. So they use an established online video player like JW Player, Brightcove, and they just need additional video content. So that remains, to this day, our kind of our core market. However, obviously, new opportunities have emerged as technologies have improved and just as things have developed. So digital signage or digital out of home, we've seen a big increase in customers in that space over the last kind of 12 to 18 months. Obviously, COVID has had a very negative impact on that. But if you think of, you know, so gyms, bars, restaurants, the back of taxis, the back of Ubers, corporate lobbies, essentially, as I said, you know, it could be in an elevator, anywhere there's a screen and there's eyeballs that, you know, in the past might have just had something static in there and now has the ability, particularly, you know, as technologies improve, to have video in there. Now, it might not be monetized in a traditional way, but it might be a better use of a screen. So we've done lots of deals over the last one, with companies putting video into gyms, on cardio equipment, into doctors' waiting rooms, in nail salons, in bars. And obviously, you can program the content for that very specific and niche audience and monetize it accordingly. Obviously, OTT then has been a huge growth area for us and has largely been the kind of the catalyst or driver for us to move into the launching of Video Elephant TV, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Just people are looking to use video more widely, maybe kind of outside the traditional media space. It could be on corporate intranets. It could be for just communication and PR, just generally conveying a message, or in educational space that there's an opportunity to use video. That's premium, it's brand safe, it's relevant to the messaging around whatever the product or service might be.
So as you mentioned, you've launched an OTT app, and this is something that, you know, I'm sort of always waiting for this explosion of OTT apps. I feel like we're on the cusp of starting to see it, and it was quite exciting to hear about your announcement. So could you tell us a bit more about your app, what it's called, where you can download it, all the rest of it, and how you're going about it?
Yeah, so it's going to be called Video Elephant TV. So it'll be available at videoelephant.tv and all the major platforms. So Roku, Roku UK, iOS, Android, Apple TV, Amazon Fire. That's where we're starting initially, but we will be hopefully rolling it out to, you know, to the TV manufacturers directly, Samsung, Vizio, LG, etc. I suppose the genesis or the background to it, Vinny, is, you know, as I alluded to, we've over the last number of years, we've built up this very large and diverse library of content, 2 million plus assets in there, all short form. And while that works really, really well, and, you know, for our core business of, you know, publishers, media companies are looking for additional video content to run pre-roll around and, you know, add additional video to their web pages. Once we started getting into the digital signage and OTT space, this very large library it became problematic for potential customers because they were looking for something a little bit more packaged and bundled, something a little bit more oven ready, so to speak. And so, you know, going to somebody like with hundreds of, if not thousands of screens somewhere and just saying like, here's 2 million assets, you know, knock yourself out became problematic. And they were saying, look, if you could package this up into curated feeds of content by genre or category or whatever, that would be really, really interesting to us. So we decided earlier this year, before we ever locked down, we decided we would start to build our own Video Elephant branded curated channels using our own library of content. And so we started off creating these channels like Video Elephant World News. So like we've so much news content coming in every day from all our fantastic partners, as I said, you know, Al Jazeera, Bloomberg, Euronews, Reuters, just Fox, just from different sources, ITN, The Telegraph, from all over, Press Association, from all over the world. So we were able to create quite a unique product in like a Video World News curated news feed. And then we were able to do something similar in the entertainment space, in the lifestyle space, in the sports space, and so on. And so the goal was to have these kind of ready-made channels that we could offer to people and push them out to these end distribution points, which are, you know, I must admit, like predominantly US-centric for us initially, but, you know, so Pluto and Samsung and all of these. And as we started to get into this and as we got into the lockdown, so probably just 6 months ago, this kind of decision was made, well, if we're going to go to all this trouble of doing all this, why don't we, you know, create our own end distribution point and to distribute our own content. And so kind of Video Elephant TV was born. I'm not joking, Vinny, it was literally 6 months ago, it's gone from concept to launch in 6 months, which is like a phenomenal testament to the team, what's been done. You know, we talked to a number of different platforms and, wearing the good old green jersey, we selected an Irish company, a company called Actionista here in Dublin, to help build all of this for us. And the thinking behind it is to kind of become a bit like a Pluto for short form. So, you know, we're launching with 60 plus linear channels, broken out by all the various categories, news, sport, entertainment, lifestyle, fashion, et cetera, et cetera. And then a video on demand or discovery section where you can go in and select by keyword, by content provider name or by genre and just, you know, watch the videos you want when you want. So it's our first foray into having a direct-to-consumer product. So it's all a little bit new to us, but it's not, you know, it's not a sea change for us in that, like, we've always been a content first, a content centric company. And it was a logical kind of innovation or next step for us to kind of move from being a B2B business into also being a B2C business. The two are, they work very, very closely together. They're not competitive with each other in any way. And I suppose another very interesting thing for us is the kind of the ancillary of the spin-off benefits Video Elephant TV is going to provide us to our B2B business, you know, both from the opportunity just from our building our library and our content acquisition. You know, it's a fantastic way to display the content to our potential customers and licensors. And it also gives us the opportunity to create new channels and new feeds for anyone who wants them. So any one of our content partners who wants to, you know, create a linear channel and not only add it to Video Elephant TV, but to push it out to other, we can do that for them now, something we couldn't really do heretofore. And it also allows us to, create, you know, so any customer or potential customer could come to us and say, look, I really would love a feed about, you know, any category or genre, and we can do that for them, whether it's entirely from our library or whether it's, you know, their content mixed in with our library or the two or some combination of the two. So there's lots of ancillary benefits to it as well.
Yeah. One of the things that I've always, as I've mentioned earlier, I've always been waiting for this moment where, you know, we, all of a sudden every news, major news publisher has their app and has it distributed everywhere. Plenty of them are sitting on fairly, you know, sizable content pools, certainly, you know, enough to sort of make it interesting for their sort of online followers or subscribers to be able to sort of go in and have some sort of interesting video experience every day, you know, maybe with a political, certain political viewpoint or, you know, certain, I feel like they could be reaching those niche audiences on the TV in the way that they're following them on every other device. And there's a missed opportunity there. But, you know, I think one of the big barriers to entry has been that people just view it as a different world almost. And so could you sort of explain a little bit about how you go about building the app? Obviously, you've been partnering with Axionista, and any of these companies would, in all likelihood, go about partnering with another company in order to build it. But what was the process like? I mean, like you said, you've managed to do it in 6 months. I suppose having the content assets at your disposal helps. But how difficult was that process to getting to where you are today?
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Having the content and the, you know, the diversity of content we had, so to be able to stand up a very broad and diverse, you know, offering, was a huge advantage. There's no question about that. We did it in 6 months. There's been an absolute mountain of work has gone on behind the scenes, as you can appreciate. We hired a head of OTT back in January. As I said, we hired this lady in LA, Stacey Anthony. She's been absolutely fantastic for us. She had built the Stir app for Sinclair. She had worked for Watchable, built the Watchable offering for Comcast a number of years ago. So really, really knew she was doing. And so we had brought her in on to help us to curate and build these channels. And it was kind of, is then just on the back of kind of conversations out of that, you know, it led us to decide to get into this space ourselves. I mean, we were obviously looking at all the different OTT offerings and, you know, again, apologies if I'm kind of coming at it from a US standpoint primarily, but you know, we've seen all these, you know, Pluto and Samsung, and we've seen Comcast launch Peacock earlier this year, and we saw Quibi, and you know, all these different offerings, and the majority were either, you know, they were all subscription based offerings, and that's just a game you cannot play. It's just so difficult unless you have phenomenal brand awareness or very, very deep pockets. That's just a game you just can't play. And so you have Netflix and Disney Plus and these guys. And then in the free space, you know, you have people like, say, Peacock now, which is a very strong offering, and you have Pluto. But what was standing out to all of us is they were almost all short or long form content, you know, traditional long form content. And so we just saw there was probably an offering to do something around short form. And, you know, Quibi has had its own challenges, but a very different and, you know, distinct offering to what we've been trying to do. We're in completely free ad supported, you know, as a user experience. It's very, very different. It was a kind of a logical thing for us to do. You know, I think once you've selected the underlying partner to go and build it with and partner with, once you have the library and you have the, you know, the team, because we, as I said earlier, we're very much a video first, content first company. So we have a very strong focus. We have a great content team in Dublin and who are very good and know our library inside out back to front. And we obviously see what our publishers want every day. And so from that standpoint, going to build it out, I wouldn't say it was easy, but it was probably easier than for someone who might not have been in this space before.
And I know you mentioned that, you know, it's part of its function will be as to showcase your own content, but do you have plans to monetize the app? Are you looking at ads?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's going to be ad supported. We're going to start working with SpotX as our ad server, ad manager. But we're talking to all the usual demand sources, and we're looking to build, obviously we got to build the audience, build the traffic. It'll be ad supported. We'd like to keep the ad load relatively light. to make it a pretty good user experience. We'd love to see, you know, obviously we'll take any ads we can get, but we'd love to see, you know, the 6 second ads. I think if that was something that was really to take off, it would be good for this offering, given it is it's a short form offering. So it will be, but it's completely free.
So one of the things that I learned, I think I can't remember if it was MIPCOM or MIPTV, but you know, one of the big content trading events, I went down to 1 year, and you know, one of the things I kept hearing, you know, I was always curious about why we weren't seeing more content being passed around globally. And, you know, the answer I heard time and time again was, you know, licensing is very complex. Negotiations are often quite tough. You know, particularly it gets tougher, obviously, the higher up you go into the premium long form stuff. But you know, could you provide a bit of a breakdown of how this content licensing market works, and how it is that, you know, you guys are able to have a, you know, you're able to simplify it in that you're able to, you know, basically provide the content and say, you know, take what you want.
Yeah, like. It is, but I think it's different, or it's important to differentiate kind of long form and short form. So, you know, traditionally long form deals were done, you know, it's this show for this territory for this term, and, you know, it was a price per minute, and you'd haggle over the price per minute or whatever. Whereas we got into the short form in the digital space, and it was very much a performance-based model. And so we early on secured the, you know, global distribution rights on for digital. So it was across all digital, web, mobile, you know, app, connected TV, and so on, which was it's a different offering. There's no question about it's complicated. You know, content owners, particularly the major brands, but all content owners obviously are very protective of their content. They are very concerned about where it might appear. I suppose that's the magic sauce that we bring to the equation, is we help them distribute their content around the globe to generate incremental revenue for that valuable content. We don't compete with them in any way. So anywhere they don't want us to distribute their content, we don't, whether because it's a competitor or they just don't want their content on those sites or platforms. But after that, we will go off and do deals on their behalf that they just probably wouldn't get to just because of where they are, or just the deals might be too small. So, you know, there's a real value add we're bringing to that. And then we will do all the compliance around the, you know, making sure that it's, you know, brand safe and all those places. We don't allow the content to be chopped up on social. We don't allow it to be edited in any way. So there are restrictions around it, and we would kind of monitor and manage that for them. So it's, yeah, like it is challenging. And then obviously once you get into the OTT space, that brings its own additional complications and challenges. You know, again, major brands want to, they're launching their own OTT offerings and want to make sure this anything that they're doing in this space isn't competitive to their own. And I suppose that's the bit we're always trying to, that we're always trying to demonstrate and prove, is that what we're doing is incremental and supportive. It's not, you know, it's additive. It's not in any way competing with them. So it's in addition to, as opposed to instead of. And that, they're just challenges. But we have a team, that's what they do all day, every day. We're talking to content owners and creators all day, every day. We're talking to all our existing ones, you know, trying to help them drive more revenues for their content. I would say, yeah, whereas, you know, traditional long form movies, documentaries, and so on, it's a different beast altogether.
Yeah. So you guys, I mean, you've been at the coalface, you know, as I've sort of met you in various bars around the world.
Think we've ever had a beer.
No, oh, yeah. You're always on the orange juice, Brian. You're always on the orange juice.
I was.
But you've been, you really sort of came through. You came in at exactly the right time for when it was kicking off, when this pivot to video was kicking off with publishers, and publishers were sometimes starting to view themselves as video first companies. I think some have succeeded and have continued to, you know, video continues to be either a major sort of part of the revenue or a growing source of the revenue. But I think it's fair to say that many video didn't bring solve all their solutions with a magic wand either. And I'm just wondering what for you, you know, you would have been having all these conversations with these publishers. What were the main challenges they came up against, particularly when it came to having video content playing with the pre-roll? I mean, I think EdStream has done very well, but I feel like I'm seeing less of it.
I'd agree. Yeah, no, I hear you exactly. I mean, look, the pivot to video, it's like, you know, I don't need to tell you that, you know, if as a publisher, you're probably inundated with new products and the latest, greatest, shiny thing every day. And, you know, this kind of pivot to video a couple of years ago was one of these kind of waves. But if you think about video in its, you know, the essence of it, it's simple. It's a video. But underneath it all, it is actually quite complicated when you take all the, if you break it down and take all the component parts. So, you know, if you're a larger media company, you know, chances are you have that video infrastructure in place. It's proprietary, or you've licensed it in, and you it makes sense that you would have, so say JW Player, Brightcove, or something like that. You would have the resources to produce content yourself. But it will always want to license in additional content, because you can't create content across the board for all categories and stories. You will have the ad sales team and programmatic ad stack to monetize it effectively. You'll have the editorial team to effectively place and making sure the product itself, where that video is playing, how, you know, if it's large player, small player, auto start, muted, all those variations. So there's a whole lot of components. And as you go down the food chain, so to speak, in publishers, a lot of them just don't have those resources available to them. So you might be very good at producing video, but then some of the other aspects, you just don't have the time resources. So I would say, you know, I think the big draw initially for people, you know, as you said, this is going back 3 or 4 years ago, was obviously the apparent higher CPMs, and they are higher CPMs, but challenges around that then is, you know, can I build the audience? Can I fill it? Can I sell against it? You know, what if I put video on page, who's going to manage all that for me, the operational workflow? And so what we did see, no question about it, over the last couple of years is a trend towards, so the larger media companies, we work with a lot of them, continue to license in additional content from us. You know, they're just looking for those videos from us and all the other, those components I talked about, they have. Whereas that kind of mid to longer tail publishers probably don't, and they just really want to produce really good, maybe editorial content or something, you know, they really build their audience and do all of that, and are more likely to rely now on one of these, you know, what we kind of call all-in-one providers. So the company who will give you the player plus the content plus the ads. So if I'm a, you know, a medium or smaller publisher, that's probably a more compelling offering for me. I don't need to worry about anything. They put this code on my page. We work together to optimize it from, you know, what's the best for my audience. And they bring the content, and they can sometimes pull in their own content into that. And they look after all the monetization. And so as a publisher, you're getting your check at the end of the month. That's a pretty compelling offering as to trying to do it all yourself in-house. I would say that's kind of it in a nutshell, what the challenge is. But I would say, you know, the demand for video is as strong as ever, if not, you know, greater. It's just the channels to which it's being consumed and how it's being delivered are slightly changing, but the demand is as strong as ever. And I'd agree with John, OutStream. It's a huge revenue driver for publishers, and we definitely feel it's kind of less prevalent than it was maybe 2 years ago. You just see it yourself, you know, you probably just on your own experience, you probably just come across less OutStream ads. And I think just like all products, you know, people want to launch video on some sites, just because video works really well on site A doesn't mean it's going to work on site B. So much dependent on, you know, if it's a video first and they have a lot of video there, works well. If, you know, some sites obviously are very editorial focused, if you want to go there and read, you know, 3,000 words interesting article about X, Y, or Z, you know, maybe an OutStream or any video might be quite annoying for you. So like there's a lot of factors, but I would say the main one is it's just all the trying to get all these components to work effectively for you.
Yeah. I think you're right about Outstream. I think with any shiny new thing, and we've got this sort of instant source of revenue, everyone gives it a go for a while. Some will find it works for them. Some will find it doesn't. But then, you know, often you'll have a new CRO come in and they'll reintroduce it, and then the next one will take it off. And so it's, all these things.
It's like all products. They kind of find their natural level, I think. And, you know, Outstream is a great product for many, many publishers. It's a great source of revenue for them, and it's kind of found its natural level. And there will always be pre-roll and, you know, quality premium video, and there'll always be Outstream, and there'll be other ad formats that'll come along. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. When it comes to the content, where are you seeing the biggest growth areas in terms of the content genres? Is there anything that's really exploding at the moment?
I would say in the US, there's a huge demand for local content, local news. And I presume that kind of replicated around the globe. Just kind of, we're seeing a lot of demand for gaming, esports. We're seeing a lot of demand for sports generally, obviously. Kids content is very much in demand. It's something we're being asked a lot about. Automotive is also a very strong category that we're looking for a lot. And obviously for us, as we, you know, doing more and more in Europe, you know, foreign language content. So, you know, on Video Elephant TV, we've, I think we're launching with 7 languages, the major European languages, plus Arabic and Russian. And obviously there's a huge market just in the US alone for Spanish speakers, but obviously you have the whole LATAM market as well. So, you know, that kind of foreign language content is something that we're being asked an awful lot about as well. And obviously then, as I said, you know, if you go back to the conversation about, you know, digital screens and where they might be, you know, you need quite specific content for, you know, all these different verticals and categories to where the screens might be. As I say, it could be in a doctor's waiting room. It could be in a, you know, healthcare, obviously, is content that's much sought after by the pharma companies. And the gambit, and I suppose that's what we try to do. We try to make sure that the library is as broad and as deep as it can possibly be, and make sure that, you know, if you're working with us, chances are, you know, there's a very good chance, if you're looking for content that you haven't produced yourself or don't have, the chances are we have it in the library.
Yeah.
And similarly with Video Elephant TV, like obviously some categories and channels will perform better than others. Again, depending on the geo, it is an international product from day one. It's just going to be interesting to see which ones resonate best. And we would like to think that while the content there today is like 100% from our existing kind of content partners and from our library, we would like to think we'll grow. This will give us an opportunity that other content owners out there might go, well, I would love to stand up, a 24/7 linear channel and stick it out on Video App and TV. And, you know, we could then give them that channel back and they can distribute it to other places as well, or there'll be other uses. So, you know, I think more and more content the demand for content will be kind of driven by the use as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, my final question. And if I was to give you 10 million to invest, where would you invest it and why?
Oh, yo. 10 million. Does it have to be in the company?
You're not allowed to invest it in your. You have to invest it in your own company. You're not allowed to spend it on wine. You're not allowed your Italian villa.
We closed the Series A around this time last year, summer of last year. If we were to be able to go out and close it, you know, raise another $10 million or something, we would largely do what we're doing right now, I would imagine, which is just continue to improve the product, build the team, assist with our expansion. You know, obviously, it would give us greater budget to build out Video Elephant TV in terms of marketing and promotion. But yeah, I would say just more of the same, really. Like, there's no, I don't think we.
Would you, if you were to invest it in another company, where would you stick it, or another, even another area, a growth area that you'd like to be involved in?
I would say, Vinny, someone in the data space, someone that, you know, a company that can really give you valuable insights into user behavior, which content is performing best, where, how, why, etc. That kind of space, I think that's going to become more and more important.
Yeah, the content analytics. I think as we're losing cookies, or so we believe, and we're getting more privacy compliant, I can see how the contextual piece is becoming more important.
Exactly. Brian,
it's been a pleasure. I'll sign off, and I wish you and guys all the best with the new app. It's videoelephant.tv if anyone wants to download it.
Exactly. Thanks, Vinny.
All right.
We'll see each other in person sometime soon.
Yeah, when this madness ends. All right, take care.
Thanks a million.